It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show, where for the past coming up on 7 years, we have been doing our best, all my guests as well as myself, to help people understand just how complex we are as human beings. We all know that we're physical. That's a given. I think everybody would say that we're emotional beings, and that's a given. Then we get into two other realms, which maybe people don't think about as much, and that is the learning end of it, the intellectual side of us. And I explain to people that I hope you are learning something amazing every single day of your life, including the last day of your life. And as Mark is going to be talking today with me, you know, he talks to people who have passed over. So, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if on our deathbed, you know, we get that aha experience of, wow, this is what it was all about. So I'm hoping everyone has that. And then we have a spiritual side of us as well. And I don't mean that in terms of religious necessarily, but a connection to a higher power. So those are the four facets of who we are, and keeping them in balance is really the name of the game for this show. I want people to understand that if you're out of balance, you're not going to be living your best life. If you can be in balance, then you will be. And we'll know when one part of our body is not in balance, and hopefully recognize that and do something about it. If you go to it's synergyconnectionradio.com, that is the website. If you go to show notes at the top of the page, all 430 or so shows are there. They're also about half of them on Spotify, Google Radio, iHeartRadio, and Apple as a podcast. So you can listen to this podcast any number of places. If you're on the website, please click on Boomers Forever Young, because they have amazing products. And I mention them each and every time I do a show. Myotrol is their new one. It's Myotrol. I've been using it for over a year. It helps with stamina, and who doesn't need that these days? Mark will tell you, you know, flying around the United States takes its toll on you, so stamina is a good thing. It also helps with strength building. And one of the things is, if you're over the age of 50 and listening to this show, understand that your muscles begin to decline. You lose 1% of muscle mass every single year after 50. So if you're pushing 60, you've lost 10%. If you're 70, you've lost 20%. And if you don't do something about that, that is when you get old and crumbly. That is when falls take place. And that is when you don't recover as well from those falls. So it's really important to do what you can preventative wise. And Myotrol is one of those things you can do. If you decide to try one of the products, they all have wonderful testimonies and they have videos and everything else for you to read about. But if you decide to buy something, if you put my first name, Lucy, in the discount code box, you're going to get 15% off. So I would recommend that you do that and take advantage of the discount, because, I mean, in today's world, I know they say inflation is coming down, but it's not coming down in the grocery store that I can see, and some of the other places where we spend our money. So 15% is a nice little discount. All righty. So welcome back to the show, Mark. And we're going to be talking about mending broken hearts in families, because like you and I were saying right before we started recording, one of the biggies is, if you have a death in the family, a divorce in the family, any kind of major loss, it's not just one person going through it. It's the entire family. And I'm going to include pets. You know, if a dog, a cat, you know, a horse, somebody that knew that person that's no longer in their life, they grieve just like people do. And so we have emotions that, because we are just energy, You and I have talked about the fact that it's vibrational frequencies. They feel that. And when
Yes.
they feel it, they know something has happened. So that's going to be mending the broken hearts in families, whether it's an animal family that's part of your life or whether it's a human family. And I had mentioned to you before we started recording too that today would have been my dad's 109th birthday. He fought in World War II. He was a in the 101st. He did parachuting into some of the areas where I know in France. He had also been a pilot, but he was kind of demoted, as I understand it, because he was doing some crazy things like dive bombing and going through arches, and he was a good pilot, but that isn't what they wanted him to do.
First off, Lucy, it's an honor to be doing this on the 109th birthday of your father. And obviously, he was a great dad because the apple did not fall far from the tree.
Oh, well, thank you.
And secondly, when we hear stories like, oh, he was demoted for doing crazy things, we think of our parents as mom and dad. But before we came along, they were teenagers. And think about this. So many of the greatest generation, these men and women were in their teens. So
Yes.
you give a teenager or a guy that's 20 or 21, the hottest aircraft in the world. I mean, come on, what kind of temptation is there going to be to do some really wild and crazy things? So,
I think he did all of it.
it's funny when I learned about my dad. I was his guardian on the honor flight, and the honor flight is a wonderful thing. And I'm bringing this up too because it's part of healing, and whenever you get an opportunity to do something with loved ones, a group event on healing, it's really important. What the honor flight is, years back there was a number of pilots who said, there's all these World War II veterans that never get to see the World War II monuments erected to them in Washington, D.C. So they started taking them free of charge. And then this caught on, and then Southwest Airlines donated seats on the plane. So there's a 24-hour period where guys and women, because we had some army nurses and some of the WACs from World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam. And they have a guardian, which was me, and you have the soldier, in my dad's case, the sailor. And when I heard him talking to other guys in their late 80s about what they did, and I knew my dad was special forces, but when I heard what he did, it was like, dear Lord, my dad was Rambo. I mean, it was just incredible. And we have to honor these people because we think of them, we think of loved ones, particularly elderly loved ones or ones who died from terminal illnesses. We think of them as how they died.
Right.
Very old, infirm, possibly with dementia or people who are dying from debilitating diseases. And once they transition, they become these vibrant, energetic beings. But before all that happened, they were young people,
Right.
and we should celebrate their entire life.
Right. I have some great pictures of him in uniform, in fact, leaving the harbor in New York City. In uniform. So my son has that picture blown up on his wall.
That's
So
awesome.
he was a cool guy. Temperamental, but I think that did a lot, to in terms of temperament. I think it changed people's personalities to go through what they went through.
Well, so many of the greatest generation, the Korean War, and it really wasn't heavily identified or dealt with until Vietnam, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. In the first two world wars and in Korea, they called it shell shock or battle fatigue. There's a story, and it's in the movie Patton. And if anyone hasn't seen the movie Patton with George C. Scott, you got to. That was, I think, his finest performance. But General Patton was visiting an army hospital, and he was visiting the wounded, and he saw this one guy sitting there. What's wrong with you? He said, they said it's my nerves. And Patton slapped him in the face, called him a coward, and ordered him back to front lines.
Well, as it turned out, this episode got all the way up to Eisenhower, who made him apologize. But back then, that was how it was treated, was suck it up, man up, get over it. And then
Right.
by Vietnam, our the military medical wing started to see that this is a real psychological condition. So many of us were raised by parents with post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is a good segue, Lucy, for the discussion today, because everyone suffers from PTSD to some degree. And PTSD is not always caused by being in military combat. It can be caused by a traumatic event close to home, like losing a loved one, seeing a loved one die, parents who've lost children, certainly. And it manifests in many, many different ways. So I think this is a good segue to our conversation today.
I think so too. I started out actually many years ago as a grief therapist. And I don't know whether we had ever talked about that, but I worked with funeral homes throughout the United States in helping them set up different kinds of programs for their families. And one of them in St. Louis is still going really, really strong. And it was called Coping and Living Life. Because and I use the butterfly as the symbol on all of our literature, but it was helping people understand that, especially the funeral homes, that the grief doesn't stop at the funeral. You know,
Right.
it continues for months, if not years and years, before
Several
people are
lifetimes.
able to, or yeah, or maybe never. But you begin to, I guess, maybe deal more effectively with it, you know, as time goes on. And the pain is not as intense, but the memories will always be there.
They will. I love the title of this episode, Mending Broken Hearts. Broken heart syndrome is a very real medical condition. It's also referred to as tachycardiomyopathy. And what happens is when people lose a loved one and they're in a profound state of grief, and you will generally see this with couples that have been married for a very long time or family members that were very, very close. What happens is they go into cardiac arrest because the hormones that are generated by grief cause the left ventricle to swell up and balloon and block flow of blood through the heart. And the reason that it's called tachycardiomyopathy is because a tachycardiomyopathy is a Japanese octopus trap. And when you look at imaging of the heart undergoing this, the swollen left ventricle resembles a Japanese octopus trap. And the thing is, it normally occurs within 2 weeks of the death. So if you have somebody, a parent who lost their mate, or a parent who lost a child or anybody, and they start getting sweaty and numbness and tingling, get them to the emergency room right away. Tachycardiomyopathy is treatable. And the interesting thing is it only happens once in your life. So once it's treated with the proper medications, it won't repeat. It happens mostly in women, although it is not un, you know, although it will occur with men. Football player Doug Flutie, his father died, and then his mother died like a day or two later. Perhaps the most famous case of broken heart syndrome was when Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia from Star Wars, died, and her mother, Debbie Reynolds, died the next day. And those two were very, very close. So when somebody in your family dies, keep an eye on everyone, including yourself. And don't do this, oh, I'll get over it. If you start getting numbness, tingling, sweats, difficulty breathing, get to the ER, because if you're wrong, well, then you went to the doctor. And if you're right, it can save a life. And nothing is more difficult. You lose one loved one and then another one within days.
Yeah, right, exactly. When families with children in particular a child dies. One of my experiences in working with these families is very often the family, the couple doesn't make it. You know, they're each handling their grief differently. One might be angry and acting out, the other one retreats. But in so many instances, divorce takes place 2 to 5 years later because they kind of distance themselves from each other. Maybe there's a blame game going on, if you had only kind of stuff. But what's your experience with that?
I work a lot with an organization helping parents heal. And for those of you who've lost a child or know somebody who has, please refer them to helpingparentsheal.org. It is a nonprofit organization and it's dedicated to doing just that, helping parents heal. It was founded by two women, Irene Vouvalides and Elaine, oh gosh. I'm drawing a blank now, and I'm sorry because I deal with them all the time. But both of them lost children. And they are the opinion that you can recover from this loss. And the organization, I'm very proud to have been with them from the start. And every 2 years they have a major convention in Phoenix. And it's important. And they also have subdivisions helping fathers heal, helping mothers heal. Now they're branching out into helping siblings heal. Let's look at what happens when a child dies. First, there's the way the mother grieves. Then there is the way that the father grieves. And I don't mean to generalize, but women tend to be better at embracing and accepting and confronting their emotions and their grief than men, because men are socialized to suppress their grief. You know, we're raised like, you know, a real man doesn't cry. Well, I wrote an article for an upcoming issue of Best Holistic Life magazine, the June issue on men's health, and it's entitled Real Men Are Not Afraid to Cry. And it's about that. Now, we'll get to that in a moment. So there's a way the mother grieves, the way the father grieves. Many times the mother will feel that the father isn't grieving the right way because he's not expressive enough. The father will believe that the mother is going over the top and is too much. So then there's the way that they grieve as parents together. And then if there are surviving children, then there's the way that they grieve as parents and the way that the children grieve. And then the children of the surviving children start to think, because all the focus is on the deceased child, that, well, I guess they love that child better than and more than me. Then there's the way the siblings grieve among themselves. And if there's very young children who are survivors, you know, this you know, Johnny's in heaven. After a while, that excuse doesn't work. Then things get even more complicated if the parents are divorced or if there's a blended family. So you can see there's all these different dynamics and directions that occur when there's a death in the family. It doesn't necessarily have to be a death of a child. It could be a death of a parent or you know, a death of a grandparent, but the death of a child is without a doubt the most profound and painful sense of loss. And it sets off this entire plethora, this entire chain reaction of grief and interactions. And that's why so many marriages don't survive the death of a child. Parents get divorced.
Right. I mean, they just can't handle the intensity usually like I said, there's a blame game that kind of goes on within families. And I've worked with children that are survivors. And in so many cases, you know, if depending on whether it was the oldest child that died, the middle child that died, or the youngest that died, but if that role is out of the family, one of those roles because that child died, then there's a void as to how do I behave because now I'm the oldest or now I'm the youngest. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
And so it becomes complicated in that respect as well. And I've known, you know, where there was a favored child that was alive that died, and the younger child, you know, was fine, but now he's an only child.
Yeah.
And So that became an issue as well because he was trying to live up to the expectation of the parents who had this favored child that is now gone.
I knew this when I was in my 20s. I knew this guy, and he was one of three boys in a family, and one of his siblings died. And he said after that, he goes, "Well, my other brother and I, we got everything we wanted." And then I could see how that certainly explained a lot of his behavior, because then they became incredibly spoiled. The parents indulged them. And of course, it's very natural and normal for parents to want to do, but you're also doing the child a disservice when they're completely spoiled and indulged and you know, his behavior. And this was a very this individual just kind of expected the whole world to do everything for him. He had a very parasitic way about him, didn't think he needed to work or earn money, or, oh, I can't handle a job. And so when he became an adult, he was quite frankly an emotional and intellectual train wreck. It's because his parents, they spoiled him to the point where he was so coddled he couldn't think for himself. I remember, like, we were both in our middle 20s, and he goes, "Well, I'm still a baby. I'm just a baby. I don't have to worry about things."
Oh my.
And I was a trial lawyer, and I was trying cases, and it's like, I'm not a baby. I haven't been a baby since I was a baby. You know, I mean, the way my parents raised me when I was 16, they would make me make big decisions. I mean, of course, they had veto power, but that was their, they said, you've got to learn to think for yourself and begin to be responsible for your own actions. You can't just expect everyone to do something for you. So many times, when people overindulge the surviving child or children, they think they're showering them with love, but unfortunately and inadvertently, they're doing a disservice to that person.
Right. No, they're making them invalids, is what they're doing. Yeah. Which is really very tragic because once that person is, 18 and over, they don't have coping skills. And where are they going to learn them? I mean, in our world today, it's pretty difficult if you don't have parents and teachers that are well versed in how to help somebody learn coping skills, learn how to solve problems. I don't know where they do learn it. Maybe the School of Hard Knocks.
Well, sometimes they don't. I mean, I've met people in their 60s and 70s that, you expect people to acquire wisdom as we get older. Okay. You're a very wise person, and I like to think that I've got a few tidbits of wisdom to share with people now and again. And the only way we get that is through living and through coping and through confronting things. I've met people in their 60s and 70s that emotionally were teenagers and acted like spoiled brats. And then I realized spoiled brats get older, but there's no depth there. Death is a horrible thing, but it is also something that all of us have to deal with. In my book, Never Letting Go, is a guide on the journey through grief. And the theme of the book is you have to let go of the pain and the sorrow caused by the death, but never let go of the love for the person who died. And you're a grief counselor, and a lot of grief counselors say, well, you have to learn to let go of the person. Well, you're not going to, so why? Instead, focus on letting go of the triggers and the things that make you miserable, and keep the relationship, the loving aspects of the relationship in your heart. The other aspect is, as a psychic medium, I facilitate communication between people here in our world and their loved ones in spirit. And when someone you love dies, like your dad, okay, your dad passed. And it doesn't matter if he'd be 109 today, he's still your dad, but you still have a relationship with your dad. The fact that somebody died doesn't mean your relationship ended. It means it's gone from one of a physical nature to one of a spiritual nature. And where I've seen a lot of grief groups, especially with children, the parents start carrying on as if the child is still physically alive. You've got to acknowledge the reality of the death, but realize that that child is now an immortal, living spirit, and you will feel the presence of that child, and or whoever it is, whoever, a parent, a sibling, whoever that significant other, they will come to you. It'll be it in dreams, you'll feel them around. You have to realize that your relationship has evolved to a different level. But people that keep, their child's room as a shrine to them, and I'm not faulting people for doing that. I got to share something, Lucy, that I saw. I was at this butterfly, I guess it was like an aviary, but for butterflies. It was at this really nice place in Colorado. And I was there with Rocky, Rocky, my manager. I'd been speaking in, it was right outside of Boulder. And, these butterfly gardens are awesome, and the butterflies are flying around. Well, there was this woman there with her husband, and they were pushing a baby carriage, and she took out this doll. And you could tell it was a doll. I mean, it looked like kind of like a Cabbage Patch doll. And she would be positioning it and taking pictures and go, oh, she wants this and she wants that. And I said to them, I go, oh, do you sell those dolls? And she goes, she's mine. I don't sell. And she took off, and her husband goes, mind your own business. We lost a child, and that's how she copes with it. And I'm
Oh
like,
my gosh.
whoa.
Wow.
Oh, and yeah, see, every grief counselor like yourself, I've run that by now. That is not how to deal with, to take a doll and pretend that it is your child who died, push her in a carriage. I even heard from women that were coming out of those ladies' rooms, somebody said there's some nut in there changing the diapers on a child,
Oh my gosh.
on a doll of a child. Okay, and this wasn't, and this was just like a, like a like I said, like a Cabbage Patch doll, a five, and I cannot imagine any legitimate psychologist, much less a psychiatrist, prescribing that type of therapy. And everyone that I've talked to is like, "Are you kidding me?" And I know some of the top psychiatrists, near death and afterlife researchers, and grief doctors and researchers in the world, and they all said that is not how to deal with it. That is complete denial. What do you call it when you project something? Transference. Transference. They're transferring their love for their dead daughter onto a pillow, basically.
You're right. They'll never probably resolve that. I mean, she's only going to, I mean, a child grows. So even if it had been an infant who died, at a year, what does she get, a bigger doll? At 7, does she take that doll to, first grade? Oh my goodness, that is really something.
Yeah, it was really sad, and the father got very upset with me for saying something, because I thought, well, they're taking all these publicity pictures. Maybe this is something online that they're doing, the way she was cradling it. So that was also a lesson for me, that when I see something that I don't understand, just keep my mouth shut,
Children, usually around maybe 3rd grade, there is a book that was called Flat Stanley. Did you ever hear of it?
I have not. What's it about?
Well, it's not so much the book itself, although I'm sure the author would beg to disagree, but Flat Stanley is something that children all over the United States create a small Flat Stanley. Usually put it in an envelope, send it to a grandparent, and have Flat Stanley go with the grandparent to all of these different events. And they position it like a cutout. And so we had one of our, we had two children, with two grandchildren that did this, but one of them sent a huge Flat Stanley. It was like 6 feet tall. And so we took it to Clearwater Beach. We took it to it was like a New Year's Eve party, and put it in a chair with a, so we played right along with it. And then you send Flat Stanley back to the child then submits it for a report, and they explain all the places that Flat Stanley has gone. The other one was much smaller and easier to work with, but that is quite different than what this lady did, with bereavement issues. So I don't even know what to think about that, other than it's very sad because she
Sad.
will never recover from that loss if she continues to put all of that transference, as you said, into a doll instead of accepting that the child is no longer there. But because of this ability that we have with our frequencies, if you're open to that frequency, you're going to feel the other side. You're going to know that that loved one is there, and they're there to support and to provide maybe direction. I get direction all the time, because I'm going to be relocating back to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I get direction all the time from whoever. I don't know whether it's a family member or whether it's, one of my guides, but they've been telling me for a long time, it's time to go. And I think maybe I didn't share this with you, but the number 7 and the number 11 are huge numbers for me. And for a lot of different reasons, but those are universal numbers that, if they want to look them up, spiritually,
Yeah,
of
they're
what those numbers mean.
powerful.
And so I knew I was going back to Green Bay, but I didn't know where I was going to be living. And it turns out, as I was looking and looking and looking and not feeling like I was getting any direction, and it shouldn't be this hard to figure this out, all of a sudden, boom, the building appeared, and I'm on the 7th floor, and the address on the building, the numbers are 115.
Oh, there you go.
So I was like, all right, I know this is where I'm supposed to be.
Very good. Yes. Well, we have to look for the signs and the guidance from spirits. You brought up something at the beginning of the episode about many people on their deathbed getting that aha moment.
Yes.
And that is a phenomenon. I'm a near-death experience researcher, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because prior to this episode, this is for the audience. Lucy and I were discussing the upcoming 50th anniversary of the International Association for Near Death Studies conference in Chicago. That's going to be Labor Day weekend, the end of August, and I'm one of the keynote speakers. And we're going to be talking about different phenomena associated to near death experiences. And through the last 50 years of studying near death experiences, deathbed visions. Visions is a fascinating area, and everybody who has been by the bedside of someone who is declining and transitioning, hospice workers, medical professionals, they'll all tell you very similar stories, is people that are transitioning will start saying, I'm seeing, they'll start interacting and talking to people they know who've passed. In past years, this was referred to as a grief-induced hallucination, and the mainstream psychiatry and medical science is just dismissing it as a hallucination. But as a medium, I've been at the bedside of a number of people who are dying, and I can see who they're talking to. And I was at one bedside, and I think we counted 21. I counted 21 spirits, and based on the identifications, we were able to possibly identify 18 of them, and the other three, the family members of the person who's dying, they said that sounds like a great grandparent that we don't know enough about to have any information on. But what happens is like, well, I'm going to tell one of my favorite deathbed vision stories is about Betty White. Betty White, one of the Golden Girls. I mean, for those of us who've watched TV over the course of our life, there's never been a time when there wasn't a show that Betty White was in. I mean, she was in Her Show, The Pet Set, Golden Girls, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Hot in Cleveland. She even did a Super Bowl commercial in her past couple years. And the love of her life was a game show host, Alan Ludden. And they married in 1963, and he died in 1981. He was the love of her life. She said that she was so crushed after Alan died, she could never marry again. Betty lived to be 99 years old. She was just 2 weeks shy of making it to 100. And she passed on New Year's Eve, I believe it was in 2022. And in her last moments, she looked up, and this is attested to by her healthcare provider, as well as by her friend and fellow actress, Vicki Lawrence from the Carol Burnett Show and Mama's Family. They said she looked up, smiled, and said, "Alan." And then she died.
Oh my goodness, how awesome.
How awesome.
Yeah, that is really cool. I hope that that is true, for so many of us, that are believers, that this is not where it ends. I mean, I think this is a an area where we come to learn and grow as spirit, and then we transition. And I think a lot of times we do come back, because the lessons continue. But I think in some cases, the lessons are probably over and we transition into something else. So I know that you have another program coming up. And so I want to say goodbye for today. I'll have you on a future show. I'm hoping to see you in Chicago.
I hope so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for everybody, please visit my website, afterlifefrequency.com, just like my latest book, Afterlife Frequency. Sign up for my newsletter. It'll keep you up to date on where I'm going to be, what I'm doing. It would be great if some of you could make it to the International Association for Near Death Studies conference on Labor Day. It's the 50th anniversary. Dr. Raymond Moody, who coined the term near death experiences back in 1974, and then IANS was founded the following year, he will be speaking. In addition to myself and Dr. Bruce Grayson, who was one of the founders of IANS, and it'd be great for us and Lucy to meet you. So, Lucy, thank you again for having me on, and to everybody, please keep tuning in to Lucy. She's amazing.
Well, thank you very much. And please share this show, those of you that are listening, with your family and friends. Let them know what's going on in this realm, and maybe they'll be able to also make the trip to Chicago if they don't live very far from Chicago. For me, it's going to be about a 3-hour drive, which is not a big deal considering I'm in Florida now, and that would have been 1,500 miles. So 3 hours is ne definitely the better deal here. Thanks, Mark, for being a guest again. I will talk to you in the very near future. And everybody, please go out there and make this your best life. And we will see you next week. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.